Hello, this is Les Goldberg, and welcome to The Road Ahead. The Road Ahead podcast is dedicated to the future of the live events business, bringing together industry experts.
Hello, production world. This is Les Goldberg and The Road Ahead. Today, I have three amazing guests. I have Joe Volpe, and his company is called CEP. I have Andy Stavro, and his company is called Eventflow. And I have Shane Karmelich, and it's Creative Technical Services. Guys, welcome to the show.
Good to be here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Guys, we have on this show today three of the most talented technical directors in the industry that have today a combined years of experience of 107. We just did the math. And today we're going to talk about the role of the TD, and the subject of this podcast is the playbook for a great technical director. So I'm going to throw out the first question to Joe. And Joe, would you describe what essentially is the role of the TD in layman's terms, whether you're from the industry or not? How would you describe that role? And you've been doing it for over four decades, so you have a lot of experience at this.
A couple of things came to mind. One of them being, you know, the mother. If you definitely get everyone's opinions, attitudes, reactions, kind of just like your mom used to get when you were a kid. I mean, and it's not in a bad sense, don't get me wrong. But you are, as a technical, you are the guy, you are the one on the front lines of everything, having to, you know, deal with venues, vendors, truck drivers, you name it. We have to deal with it before anybody else gets on site. I think mother sums it up pretty well.
Well, you know, of all the words I thought I was going to hear today, that was not one of them. So, Shane, what are your thoughts?
I was going to throw in rodeo clown is kind of what I came to mind when I was thinking about it. You're basically there to, on site at least, you're there to catch all the punches and kind of make fun of it. Never make it a serious issue. Always make it, you know, something. Oh yeah, that's something we can handle. No big deal.
Is that the voice of calm?
It could be the voice of calm. And then you do the little cat herding, throw it in there. Always.
Sure.
You're always herding some cats. And then, and also what I've always tried to do is be a teacher. And that's a serious one, to try to teach whatever I can to anybody. I don't hold anything close to the vest. You ask me a question, you're going to get an answer. The best thing example I can do with that is the guy that decides to wire the entire truss for lighting and has no idea what he's doing, but the girl who come to me and say, you know what, how am I supposed to do this?
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm there to teach. I'm not there to criticize. I'm just there to teach.
All right, Andy, your thoughts. The role of the TD, you have mother so far, and you have, rodeo clown. I'm not sure what your adjective would really describe this role.
No, I love hearing this. I mean, this is great stuff. No, I agree with both Joe and Shane. I think one of the challenges is, as Joe says, you get on the front side and you're working with technicians that want to do everything to their greatest ability, right? And then unfortunately for us, we have to find a balance with the budget, right? So that's the hardest part. It's like you go to a great lighting designer, great audio engineer, and there's cabinets everywhere and fixtures, and you're like, man, I really want you to do this, but right, we have to balance these budgets. And that's, as Joe, like, that's kind of the mom coming in. It's like, hey, we don't have that. We got to manage this. So, you know, you're coordinating logistics and then keeping these great players, trying to keep them in a lane that works with the budget. That's probably, I would throw that in as part of one of the challenges of being a.
It sounds like you're describing a coach. You know, and keeping all your players in line.
Very true.
Yeah, everybody wants to do, like, you get some great freelancers and they want to bring their best. And it's like, man, if I do, and it's like, I get that, but we have these parameters, right? And then you multiply that by a few departments and, you know, it becomes a full day. So
Definitely a full day for sure. I'm throwing out my next question to Shane. Shane, could you tell everybody, how did you get in this business as a technical director and how did you start? Because I know a lot of people that, you know, we're talking about the next generation and how they're going to ultimately replace us as we age out. My question is, how did you get in the business and what was your path?
My earliest experience in the business was actually in high school. My high school had a TV station in which we played back. We had channels. Basically, we had four channels throughout the school. The whole school was wired with television. So we'd play curriculum material for the students. And then we also had a small show called Target the Information Show, which was a weekly broadcasted show that we would do, along with that we'd shoot basketball and football. And I got into this because there was actually a game I was at as a sophomore, and I saw some commotion happening, and someone needed an XLR cable, ran up the bleachers and tossed over the side to connect to where the truck was, which was like a little trailer that had a bunch of gear piled in it. And basically I'm like, I can do that. I ran up and did that and just kind of got the bug. And from there, I went on to college. I went to St. Mary's College in Moraga. I happened to go to school with the Eisner daughters, and he donated a small video truck to the school. So then I kind of learned more broadcast, did a lot of directing, and then quit a job, left the industry after that, after college, became a machinist, then a truck driver.
These are good qualities to have as a TD.
Without a doubt.
Yeah. Yeah. Then I quit that and took a job driving a van delivering overhead projectors and slide projectors for McCune. It was called McCune Sound Services back in those days out of San Francisco. And that's where I truly started learning the ins and outs of production, became a production manager there. And then, you know, after 6 years there, I went freelance.
Got it.
And then been kind of a production manager freelance ever since then.
Well, Shane, I will tell you, my roots go back to high school and the video club. So the video club, yeah. This hobby thing turned into a gig and almost...
There's a little theater thrown in there too. I did some theater in high school and college too, which kind of drives my kind of creative side.
Cool.
For the business too. So,
hey, yeah. Same question to Andy. Andy, how did you get in this business? Is yours through high school like Shane's?
It is. It was through high school theater. High school theater, we were doing that senior year. We were looking for an ad. We're looking for jobs, me and a friend that was, we were doing tech, and there was a hotel here, Point Hilton Tapatio, and they needed it's like, what on earth could you need AV at a hotel for, right? That seems so foreign, but like, we'll go check it out. Yes. And then I got hired on, started with Swank, and
oh geez. Yeah. Did you go buy your first suit at Goodwill?
Yeah, you go, that's standard thing.
That's where I got all my show clothes.
You go to the secondhand shop, you get one or two good suits and back in the day, like your suits all year round. The good news, you know, the good news about that, I don't have a rock and roll touring or a you know, fancy background like that, but being in a hotel, you learn hospitality. And being in-house, you have two clients, right? I'm sure our friends at Encore can attest to this. No matter who's in-house at a hotel, that's your client. But as a provider, the hotel's also your client. You always have two clients at any given time. And it becomes, you know, you really got to work to have some service chops. So that was my big takeaway from that. Yeah. And then as things progress, you just kind of... take bigger bites and take on bigger challenges. And you look back a few years later and you're just cranking away. So
interesting. Okay, Joe, would you share with us how you got in this crazy business through the hotels?
Yeah. When the wheel was still square back then, right, Joe? There were square wheels, no round ones.
I was just going to say, you said you had, you know, you had cameras and stuff. It's like, I don't know didn't know what a camera was.
You were still drawing.
But no, I did start in high school. You know, I did. The video club, you know, we had a little, I forget what they were, the little Sony, God, and, you know, and half-inch video recording, you know, black and white half-inch video, open reel video recorders, you know, back in high school. And then when I went to college, I was actually going to college for phys ed for 2 years. And I said, that's not going to work out. And I switched and got into broadcasting.
Oh, wow.
And you know, graduated, you know, with my degree in television production broadcasting, worked for the local cable company, took their trucks out. They had two beautiful trucks that we used to do the sports things with and that kind of thing. And then the summer of my senior, after my senior year, I was offered a gig to go out on tour as a production electrician. So I spent probably 2 years on tour. I then did a lot of rock and roll between lighting, stagehand, worked for a couple of different promoters, did the tour thing. And that's where I think I cut my teeth, because you learned so much as a stagehand, as a rock and roll stagehand, as a touring electrician. You're going into a venue a day. You know, Les can attest to some of that with the touring business besides behind LMG. But, you know, you're going into a different venue every day. So you're meeting 25 new people every day. And you're dealing with 25 new egos and attitudes every day. And you know, after the rock and roll thing kind of settled out, I did my hotel stint. I worked for a local hotel AV company. And like Andy said, your clients are not only the pharmaceutical client, but it's also the catering manager or the beverage manager or the hotel manager, you know? And actually the company I worked for sent us to the local, I forget what it was, Robert Hall clothing store to buy two blue blazers and two gray pairs of slacks and a couple of shirts and ties. And, you know, and then from there, after that, you know, I met some great people working in the hotels, the staging techniques, the carabiners, you know, some of the legacy people in this business that started Multi-Image and you know, did a lot of that kind of stuff, and was then took a job for a local company in New Jersey. And then kind of went on to Sharp Weisberg World Stage as a project manager, and again, cutting your chops. And then when I went freelance, I kept my hand in doing a lot of the tech stuff, but really around 2005, I guess, focused more just on being a technical producer, technical director.
You know what's interesting? All of us have come through a different channel, some similar, some different, but it has a component of hospitality. It has ironically driving a truck. You know, it's some of the very basic things we deal with. You guys deal with trucks every day. If the equipment doesn't make it there, that is definitely a problem. And so if you've driven the truck, you really do understand the details. But it's really interesting that all of that knowledge that has been ascertained over so many years and the experience, and all having a little bit of that hotel background and the hospitality is kind of all the ingredients, you know, that go into what it takes to be a great technical director. I'm moving on. My next question is to Shane. Shane, what do you find the greatest challenges of being successful as a technical director? You know, what are the minefields you have to walk through and overcome on a regular reoccurring basis? You probably have some expectations that, you know, some things might not go as planned. And so, but what are your thoughts on that question? The greatest challenges?
Yeah, there's physical challenge. And I think there's also like mental challenges. A lot of them I think we already kind of touched on, and that's dealing with egos and attitudes and expectations, and setting expectations are some of the big ones. Challenges like on-site are a dime a dozen now. Some of them are time allowances. We've lost so much time in on-site. Things have to happen at an app pace is kind of what I say. You know, things are no longer... You don't have the luxury of having enough time to do a load in anymore. I've taught myself that 24-hour days are 2 days, basically. And that's how I tend to now create on-site schedules. Things like trucking costs.
Clients don't want to hear that.
Yeah, I know. trucking costs are killing us. We're having to jeopardize, I think, equipment packages to fit trucking budgets in. That's a big stickler for me. Having enough experienced staff is another tough one. especially after the pandemic. We had a lot of people leave the industry, had a lot of local labor companies thin way out to where it's hard to even pick up local labor. I found myself almost 100% using union labor everywhere I go right now, because it's the only way I can depend on a full crew showing up at least, and getting some people that actually do have, you know, some kind of experience for that. And finding that they're actually, they're playing the game a lot better than they used to. Encore is too. They're starting to play the game a little bit better than it was in the past, at least with budgeting and, you know, rules and things like that. The more comical things, chandeliers are a challenge. Dead scissor lifts, empty propane tanks, the lack of loading docks, and the fact that we can not store anything in ballrooms anymore, either because there's no room left or because Reedy County has decided to not allow any empty cases to be in any ballrooms anymore.
That's interesting.
So, Shane, that is quite a list of interesting factoids.
And that's just touching on it. I could go on and on, but you have to laugh them off is what it is. They got to be laughable.
Andy, could you add to Shane's list of crazy challenges? I never thought I could not store an empty road case in a ballroom because the ballroom's not allowed to have empty road cases.
It's crazy. No, I think Shane, you nailed them all. I mean, post-pandemic, the load-in times are gone.
Yeah.
The room spaces are gone. And I don't know if that's because institutional knowledge on the meeting and event planning side is gone. And they, you know, these people see a X square foot ballroom, like, yeah, that's the spec. That fits. It's like, yeah, but you need so much for production, yeah. Right? And yes, post-COVID, we're backloading more semis. We have more, like, everything's got to be delivered in 10 hours, right? Start to finish. And yeah, and it's frustrating because you want to do the best job you can. And as you take time away, at some point you're coming off the runway and you're like, that's as good as it's going to be. You have a show, right? I wish I could have detailed a few more things, but with the time, that's, I think the time is the, as you're saying, is the current, that's the biggest challenge, you know, aside from, you know, playing the mother role, as Joe pointed out. So,
you know, it's interesting. Technical directors come up with what I'll call as the master plan. And if everybody just follows the program and does what they're supposed to do, the plan probably works most of the time. And as soon as someone either shows up late or incomplete, or the something is not on the truck, or some variation, it throws sometimes the whole plan out of kilter. You know, you got to get the truss up in the air if you're going to fly anything. So, Joe, any thoughts on the greatest challenges?
I mean, both of them, you know, Shane and Andy really, you know, nailed a lot of different things. I mean, I think some of the challenges that I've run into lately are just what the producer wants. You know, the producer wants 175 feet of widescreen. And doesn't understand the fact that a keynote machine can't run that.
That is hilarious.
Are you getting a lot of people? Are you guys getting a lot of producers or however the event goes? Are you guys getting the sense that people are leaning on you as not just the technical, but as the creative component to it now as well?
And even more, I think I were going to hit that up in a question coming up, but even more than that, because I'm now getting leaned on. I'm in control of all production schedules, it seems.
I mean,
the client just gives me a block agenda and says, here, build a production schedule. And then I'm in charge of now fully implementing catering. I'm checking on people's dietary needs and, and interacting with the hotel and setting up all those meals and scheduling all that. Instead of just saying, here's the crew I have, can you add us to the meal plan? You know, there's definitely
right. Well, you're better than me. I don't deal with luggage and I don't deal with, you know, employee catering. I'll feed my crew, but you know, but what you just said is like the producers are definitely leaning on us. You know, I mean, I know Andy's background, Shane, I don't know you, but you know, my video background, producers lean on that I know, lean on my video background to say, can we do something like this? Or how do we do something like that? Sometimes they take that knowledge and say, okay, great. Sometimes they're like, nope, we're going to run 150-foot widescreen off a keynote machine.
No, that does, and, yeah.
You know, when it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and I get that too. You know, I definitely get leaned on. Yeah, I get leaned on for that kind of stuff too, because my background is like yours. It's
No, I think we're getting leaned on more and more for other things than, I mean, you know, I'll date myself when we used to do, you know, 18 and 24 projector slideshows.
Oh, I'm with you.
The technical director didn't have.
With you. I did. I built 300-foot long scaffolding systems, and I did Pawnee projection, and you know, I quadrupled over 10, 20 projectors in a room so dark that you can't even see your own hand.
You can't. But you know, the TD, you know, TDs then were not as concerned because they had, you know, slide guys, they had programmers, they had the Forox guy in the corner making slides at 2 o'clock in the morning. You know, nowadays, you know, and it was kind of a set formula. You could do three things, you know what I mean? You could do a single screen, you could do 2:1, you could do 3:1, you could, you know. Now with the onset of Malumen, with the onset of Pixera, with the onset of Watchout, God forbid. You know, what clients want to see is more and bigger, you know, and like Andy said, the budgets don't support it. And the timeline, like Shane said, the timelines don't
support. You forgot the convection oven guy, because I did that job back in the day.
Is that the hot box? The hot box where we need the amoebas? Oh my goodness.
Well, yeah, we used to take all of our hair dryers out of the hotel rooms and put them in the boxes to keep the slides dry.
And I always traveled with the glass slide mount kit. That was a staple. You had to have that in your workbook.
Okay, let's shift gears, guys. Let's shift gears, okay? From the history of AV, we're going to Andy. Andy, this question is, how do TDs provide the best value? I believe a great TD in the playbook, if a TD makes great decisions, I think the producer gets so much value from that. And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think they're looking for us to be reliably consistent. If we can come to them with intelligent answers consistently, the hardest challenge is to be available for your producer, right? That's been the best feedback I've got. You hit some of those good windows. It's like, well, I'm not on four shows while I'm trying to advance this one. And they're like, you're always available. It's like, man, being available to the producer and being consistent for them and being able, like, you know, they're going to bounce creative questions off of you, and they're going to bounce some other things. So that's just being consistent and being available for them, I think, is the biggest value, you know, and bringing the knowledge.
Yeah, Shane, what are your thoughts on value?
A lot of value kind of goes back. We were talking about relying heavily on creative now, and a lot of the lower budget shows also is just doing a complete creative design where they can't afford a creative director. So I tend to do a lot of set design in my pre-production work, mostly with LED, because that's all I like to work with. And then another thing is I have one producer. Actually, a lot of the producers I work with is budget, owning the budget. Like, I'll completely own my budgets. And again, goes back to time. I find myself writing budgets for shows, for proposals, things like that, probably 90% of the time without any backup quotes. It's all just done on base knowledge and base experience. And that's kind of how I've been working for probably almost 3 to 4 years now. Because there's just no time. I mean, I'm on a proposal today that I got. There's a proposal due Monday that I got called about at 4:30 2 days ago that needs to be, you know, presented by Monday. It's a 2,300 person general session, a full exhibit floor and a full breakout setup, you know, and I haven't even had a creative meeting with the producer yet because they're not available. So it's things like that to where, you know, it's I have to lean a lot on my knowledge of what things cost and try to stay up to that. And then it's pretty much all on my shoulders if it doesn't come through, because that's the ask. That's the new ask of, you know, of that. So,
Joe, your thoughts on providing value as a technical director?
I mean, what Shane was just saying is, you know, when you're budgeting something, and I do get involved in budgeting at some point, I sometimes, and it's been going on for a while, I just don't know where producers come up with their numbers. You know, they say to you, here's the number. It's like, well, how did you come up with that? You know, it's like, oh, well, you know, I did this and I did that. And I just had a conversation the other day with a producer who said he used to bill a client $200 for travel expenses, not hotels and flights and that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? And you know, now he's getting hit with $400 worth of travel expenses because Ubers are more expensive. People are parking. People are, you know what I mean? But it's just a budgetary, you know, and I think you could be the most value to a client by listening to what he's asking you for. And I mean, giving him a realistic answer to it. And that's the only thing you can do. And if he doesn't understand the realistic answer to it, it's on him. You know.
Yeah.
Okay, we're moving on. We're moving on. This question's back to Andy. Andy, how do you deal with crisis?
Step one, you know, when
I know Andy, so this should be good.
What's the manual, operator's manual say? Yeah. How do you deal with crisis for a TD?
Hair on fire. Yeah.
I panic immediately. Just immediate. First thing, panic. Now, I think first thing is just remind yourself of perspective, right? We're not saving babies, all right? Let's take a step back and let's just logically work through it. Sun's still coming up tomorrow. I just start with the resetting because we lose perspective in that instant. Something weird's happened. It's like, let's ground ourselves, grab the smart people, grab everyone's opinion, make a fast choice, move on, right? And that's probably all I got on.
That sounds like a play in a playbook. That sounds like a play. Shane, your thoughts?
He read all my points. Assess the situation, discuss with your best staff, and act calmly, professionally, and then use your smoke and mirrors to divert attention away from anybody that's worried about it.
Joe?
Show bacon.
Do you like it? I like his answer.
Show bacon. That's the best. He's got the best answer. Absolutely the best answer. Show bacon. I'll one up you, Joe. The bread at the bottom of the show bacon.
Oh,
there you go.
Okay. The next question goes to Joe. Joe, what's the most fun part of the gig? And what is the most fun project you've worked on or you're most proud of?
I mean, to me, the best part of any gig is the people you have on site with you, in all honesty. I can't tell you how many times, you know, you walk into a show, you know, I just did a gig a couple of weeks ago with Andy, and it was great seeing Andy again. You know what I mean? I hadn't seen him in a year or so. It was fantastic seeing Andy, you know? And it's the people, for me, it's what my wife says when I leave this business, I'm going to miss the people the most. Couldn't care about the gig, the gear, the hotel. It's going to be the people, honestly. That's the most, to me, the most fun part of the gig.
Your road family.
100%. 100%.
How about the project you've worked on in your life that you're most proud of?
I mean, you know, not for nothing. Doing this for 45 years has been one or two.
one or two.
You know, a couple of years ago, I was asked to be the technical producer for an Amazon project with a client out of LA. And we did four premieres of one of Amazon's shows. And I was asked to be the technical producer for two of them, one in Mexico City and one in London. And it was probably 4.5 to 5 months of my year that I worked on this project in these two cities. And just to be able to pull off what we pulled off in Mexico City and in London, Andy was in LA doing the project, so I know he knew some of the backstory of this, where I was, but just to pull off what we pulled off in the center, in a park in the center of London, and a 450-year-old church in the center of Mexico City was just amazing. I felt.
Wow.
That's awesome. Same question to Shane. Shane, what's the most fun part of the gig? And it's definitely not the bread or the bacon. I just know there's something else in there. And also, what project have you worked on that you're most proud of?
I would say I'm going to just go right with Joe and that staffing. It's seeing those people that you may have not seen in 6 months or 6 years, even, you know, to recross paths with someone. So I think staffing is a big part. The other, my other favorite part of the gig is when the last door closes on the truck. That's always my favorite part. You know, that last loading dock door shuts and the truck pulls away. That's a good part. Projects is difficult. I'm like Joe, I've done so many projects. One I'm most technically most proud of was during the pandemic. I did a broadcast shoot for a client that was all done with tracking cameras and on a big green screen production. So it was all with Unreal Engine. And that was like the first time I dove deep into that kind of thing. We had an articulating jib that tracked. Mm-hmm. We had a rail cam that tracked, and then just the regular zoom stick camera that tracked and everything. And just kind of how far the technology has come and how cool that was, working with actually an environmental designer that created the entire atmosphere for the cool show. So that was a good one. A couple of funny ones is back in the early days, seeing Henry Kissinger dress as a woman singing on stage.
You don't hear about that every day.
Wow.
That's a unique one. And then I did a show. Yep. And then I did a show for an Oracle event. There was David Foster, who was promoting a young piano player at Larry Ellison's house, and Nobu catered the show.
Those are called exotics.
So that was another extremely unique event.
Yeah. Andy, your thoughts. What's the most fun part of the gig, and what are the most unique event you're most proud of?
Yeah, I'm going to second what they said. It's the people and it's the loadout. There's a weird dopamine boost when everything's wrapped and there's this calm and the trucks are in the ballroom's empty or the arena's empty or whatever. So, and I can't put any more. It's people, it's the loadout. It's those two pieces that make it fun. And then in terms of most, I'd have to think, I mean, a lot of projects there. As Joe's saying, some of those AWS gigs were really good, I would have to say. Those were fun. Those were fun projects. Oftentimes on doing the ballroom work, you know, doing the corporate stuff, we're reaching just the immediate audience. So when you get into some of these things where you're actually broadcasting out to the world, I think that adds a little. That's something cool because you're reaching and touching more people than just, you know, the 300 to 2000, whatever's fitting in your immediate space. So
so many shows now have a, you know, broadcast to the world. I would say that has become the new post-COVID standard where we've got our live audience and we've got this audience we picked up, you know, during the pandemic, and that audience we want to send out something, whether it's to promote them coming back to the live audience or people aren't going to fly in for some of these remote countries. So, all right, this is going to be my last question, and I'm throwing this to Joe first. What things would you say you've learned along the road that you've been on, the hard way, about being successful? What have been the tough challenges you've had to learn that makes you a better, more successful technical director today that maybe weren't so easy? What were the lessons you've learned?
To have a show crash and burn.
Oh, that hurts.
Perfectly honest with you. But what you learn from that is going to be immeasurable down the road. As you know, unfortunate as it might be for the client, for the audience, for whomever it might be, having a show just go up in flames. I don't know, you know, I mean, I've experienced it once in my career, and believe me, it taught me a lot. It really taught, and I wasn't a TD at the time. I was an engineer on the show, but it just went poof, and we had a reset. You know what I mean? The audience were like, "Excuse us, we'll be right back." You know, the little screen came up with the, you know, the noise on it. But you learn a lot from something like that. And the other thing is, you really have to understand that if you make a mistake, it's okay. Don't make the same mistake twice.
Yeah.
Don't make the same mistake twice.
Okay, Shane, your thoughts.
One thing I've learned is patience with communication, for sure. That's a big key. A motto I kind of live by in production is, and I've lived by it my whole career, I think, is no news is good news. So don't expect, you know, a lot of high fives and attaboys, you know, other than for maybe the crews you hire and things like that. Because it's usually, you know, a successful show is one that you haven't heard anything bad on. Learning from very early days, learning how to negotiate and deal with unions. That was something that I kind of learned the hard way. Because back in the day, at least working full-time for an AV company, was always pushed away, you know, push the unions away. You don't want to have, you know, unions are bad, blah, blah, blah. And kind of learning how to actually develop relationships, which I have great relationships now all over the country with, you know, local BAs, that, you know, if you work with them in a supportive role, they're going to help you out. And that's just, I think, one of the things that was a hard learn for me. I remember it was early in my career. I was a truck driver, and I was also brought in to do the load in. And they wanted to, I was at the Grand Ole Opry, and they were on the stage talking about lighting. I could hear them talking about lighting. So I clicked on a spotlight and lit up their spot. And oh boy, was I in trouble at that moment. Had no idea, but helleth rain down on me at that very moment. All I was trying to do was exactly. Yep.
I got it. And all you were trying to do is kind of make them feel important and lit up. Andy, your thoughts?
There's a lot of things I still struggle with trying to figure out how to be successful. One thing I struggle with is as you mentioned last minute, like if something gets thrown off on the schedule, things get weird. So I had a recent event where, not a crazy event, 40 some odd rig points, right? 5 hours into the call, not one piece of truss floating in the air. So inside, my soul is melting and I'm just doing it. And what I found myself reverting back to basic things. Like, we're all here because we have trust issues, right? Like, we're just going to all manage it, right? I found that myself.
That is ultimately, he came clean on it, all of us, okay? It's all about our trust issues.
That's why we're here. But I found myself backstage pulling feeder with the hands, plucking feeder. And because I had went from the conductor, someone that's supposed to take a high level management, and everything was going weird. It's like, well, I can make a difference plugging feeder in. So that's something I struggle with too. I got to just remember to take a step back. We have good peeps. Yeah. Boys and girls they're going to take care of this, professionals. I don't need to be in here, but I sometimes feel like maybe it's just my own. Yeah, I got to be doing something positive.
No, totally, totally guilty of that. You know, it's something that if I don't like something in the air, I'm the first one to jump on the lift and say, you're not tying that drape right. Just get out of the way and let me do it. You know, and my wife is like, just told me, oh, she's in production too. And she's told me over and over, get out of the lifts and get down here and do your job. But yeah, it's a hard thing to let go of sometimes. You know, it's like we all came up. I mean, I can't go run an audio desk or a lighting desk anymore, you know, because I obviously shifted away from that to concentrate on production management. I can get in trouble with it, but it's kind of like those things that are really like, if something isn't right, you know, sometimes again, patience. I lose my patience in communicating how to do it instead of I just go and do it, which isn't always the best solution.
Guys, I am so happy that you all joined me today because I figured out with my experience, we're at 147 years, okay? So if I add another person, we could have written the Constitution, maybe something about 200 years ago. Listen, I want to thank you, Joe and Andy and Shane. You guys are an amazing team. I look forward to seeing you in a ballroom, in a convention center, in a big place that could be dark and cold, where we're enjoying the fun of all the hard work that we put into doing these shows. And I look forward to that as this year progresses. And this is Les Goldberg and The Road Ahead. Everybody, great job. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Les. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Take care.